Nicole Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler.
The word is about, there's something evolving. Wherever may come, the world keeps revolving. They say the next big thing is here, that the revolution's near. But to me it seems quite clear that it's all just a little bit of history repeating.
And welcome back to hour two of our nightly get-together here on Air America Radio. I'm Nicole Sandler. Thank you for joining me. I am thrilled to welcome our next guest. Even if the news stories of the past few weeks haven't been so titillating, the story is fascinating in and of itself. By the story, I'm talking about the story of the family. Yes, the super secret religious sect, which it really is what it is, that includes many of the most powerful people in the country. The family is what I'm talking about. Jeff Charlotte is with us. He's the author of the book on the family. It's called The Family, The Secret Fundamentalism at the Heart of American Power. He also has a new piece on Salon.com entitled Sex and Power Inside the C Street House. There are links to both of those from my blog at RadioOrNot.com as well as my page at AirAmerica.com. Jeff Charlotte, I'm so glad you're a night owl, and thank you for staying up with us tonight.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Nicole. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for joining us. How long ago did you write the book, The Family?
Well, I wrote it over a period of about 5 years. Came out in hardcover last year and just out in paperback now. But I initially stumbled upon The Family way back in 2001 when a family friend asked me to talk with her brother because she was worried he had joined a cult, and this guy had left his relationship, left his job, and moved to Washington to work with this group. And I was in New York at the time. He came up to New York City right after 9/11. He said he was there to survey the ruins of secularism, and he ended up inviting me to join the group, and I did out of curiosity, and that began the book.
Wow. So you went to as sort of an undercover investigative reporter?
Well, I'm the crunkiest undercover reporter there is, because I gave him my real name and I was invited to join by a guy who'd known me for many years. The interesting thing about The Family is they've been sort of hiding in plain sight for a long time. They assume that if you come into their sort of sphere of influence, that you're there because God wants you there. It's a sort of dumbed down Calvinism, you know, the idea that some of us are saved and some of us are not, and has nothing to do with how good a person we are. Well, once you become a member of the family, you're one of the elect. And so, once I became a brother in the family, as it was, I'm forever a brother. I mean, I'm a brother in the family right now. I'm a bad brother because I wrote this book and put it out all in the public. But they still do see me as part of it.
Wow. Well, that's fascinating. How long were you there? How long were you living in the house?
A short period of time, just about a month. Lived in this house for sort of younger men, 20s and 30s. You're being groomed for leadership. They'd be given a mentor. It was a congressman or some such, and introduced to sort of powerful people. But what I encountered there, I didn't know as a political group when I went in, but I think the first or second day, we had a visit from Senator Jesse Helms. Well, I knew what that was. That seemed like the sort of the standard Christian right. The second day, we had a visit from the Prime Minister of Norway, a conservative who had just been elected. And I realized that this was a much more internationalist group than we were used to in the Christian right. And then the rhetoric was so strange that we were constantly talking about emulating the leadership model of Hitler. Now, this is not some kind of neo-Nazi group. They say Hitler is an evil man. But look at the strengths that he exemplified. That's what we want to put to work for Christ. And that was so odd that when I left, I stuck with it and interviewed hundreds of people, spent time with politicians, and spent years digging through their archives, 600 boxes of memos, diaries, letters, budgets, membership rolls. I mean, the whole story of religion and politics in America in the second half of the 20th century.
Well, it's so fascinating that you know, religion and politics have, in this case at least, become so intertwined, because our founding fathers wanted nothing of it. So can you go back into history and tell us about the origins of the family?
Yeah, it began in 1935. A Norwegian immigrant named Abraham Verrady, who had become a fairly prominent preacher in the Midwest, and he had this idea that organized labor was a sort of a satanic conspiracy. He hated labor unions. And he believed that one night, in 1935, God comes to him and says, Christianity's gotten it wrong for 2,000 years by focusing on the poor, the weak, the suffering, the down and out. God says, I want you to be a missionary to and for the up and out, to serve the elite, the powerful, those who I choose to put in power, and that through these powerful people, God will distribute the blessings to the rest of us. It was an explicitly anti-democratic belief system, and Verrady at that time was a sort of admirer of what was going on in Germany. And they ended up building on that through the Cold War, expanding internationally, and drawing a lot of politicians who were seduced by this belief system that says, that tells you that you're in power because God wants you to be in power. I think that's a very seductive idea for a politician.
No kidding. Was George Bush involved in the family? Because it sounds like these are his kind of people.
Well, interestingly enough, not so much. He did, we know that he converted through an organization called Community Bible Studies. This is part of his official biography. He's down there in Midland, Texas. Things haven't gone as well for him in the oil business as he had hoped. Don Evans, whom he later makes Secretary of Treasury, invites him to go to this community Bible study, and in the family's archives, which are all stored in the Billy Graham Center. So anyone, you know, who's listening out there and says, boy, this sounds a little strange, go to the archives yourself and dig up the documents, and all footnoted in the book. It turns out the community Bible study is a project launched by the families in the 1970s, specifically with the goal of recruiting businessmen who don't want to go to church because church is too filled with women, church is too feminine, it's too sissy. So they're going to have this macho gall guy Bible study, and that is what brought Bush in. He didn't end up becoming a member of the family. He wasn't as involved. I think one of the arguments that I make in the book, and that I really think progressives need to grapple with and think about, is that a lot of progressives tend to think of fundamentalism as just this one big monolith. But in fact, it's a movement fed by many different streams. And there's the sort of the populist front. That's the James Dobsons, the Jerry Falwells, the Pat Robertsons, the guys you see on TV pounding pulpits, thumping Bibles. And then there has been, for at least 70 years, an elite tradition, an avant-garde tradition. These are the guys who are insiders, establishment types. These are the guys who are a lot more sophisticated. And Bush, frankly, identified more with the populist strain of fundamentalism. So there was a lot of common cause made between them, but no, he wasn't a member of the group.
I see. Now, I have interviewed Frank Schaefer a number of times on this program, whose father was like the founder of the Christian fundamentalist movement. Was there any, or were they in the more elite group, or was there any connection between, say, them and the family?
A little bit. Frank's a friend, and we've talked about this before. Frank actually blurbed the book for me, which I was very glad for. Sometimes, some Christian right figure says this is all bunk and so on. I've got this great blurb from Frank Schaefer. It says, I was there at the birth of the modern Christian right, and believe me, this guy's got it. He's got it correct. Frank, I think the family was influenced by his father, Francis Schaefer, the real guru of modern fundamentalism. Francis Schaefer was an interesting character. He was an intellectual as much as he was a fundamentalist. And he sort of looked at the family askance. And Frank sort of told me about invitations he would get to Washington. And he thought these guys were kind of loony. So there you have, the hard right founder of modern fundamentalism. And he thought these guys were off the map. Although the reality was they were right at the heart of American power.
Well, and there, as they say, is the rub. I mean, the fact that such it's a major power center. So we need to take a break here. But when we come back, I want to talk about the modern day makeup of the family and what is going on in this house on C Street. We are joined by Jeff Charlotte. He is the author of The Family, The Secret Fundamentalism at the Heart of American Power, and his great piece right now on Salon.com, Sex and Power Inside the C Street House. We'll be right back with Jeff Charlotte in just a moment.
Listening to Nicole Sandler on Air America Radio.
Yeah, well, we are not family, but Jeff Charlotte is with us. He's the author of The Family, The Secret Fundamentalism at the Heart of American Power. By the way, Jeff, my boyfriend ordered the book from Amazon.com, I think, last week, and I think it's on back order. Obviously, all the recent scandals have propelled this book back into, you know, back to the top of mind for a lot of people. There's so much curiosity out there about the family and about the C Street house. So can you tell us what it's like today? There's one house where a lot of members of Congress, senators and congressmen, share residences in Washington, D.C., for when they're in D.C., and then, of course, they live in their districts. So there's this house. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I jumped the gun there. But, talk about the house on C Street, which has been in the news. And the interesting thing about this is that I'm not the first guy to try and sort of get the public to pay attention to the family. I mean, there's been a couple of great investigative reporters. Andy Kopkind is a real legend. Robert Scheer, terrific reporter at the LA Times. Lisa Getter, all try to bring attention to this. Even last year, we did a segment on NBC Nightly News, and it just didn't take until these sex scandals at the house on C Street, the great American blood sport sex scandals, Senator John Ensign, Governor Mark Sanford. And then, not quite as well known, but even naughtier was Representative Chick Pickering of Mississippi, who actually, according to his wife, had his rendezvous with his mistress in the C Street house, which is registered as a church, keep in mind. It's a former convent. It's a former convent registered as a church, run as kind of a fundamentalist frat house, where at any given time about 6 to 8 congressmen live below market rent, and spiritual counseling, with a family. When I was there, I sat in on a session, spiritual counseling between the leader, Doug Coe, and Congressman Todd T. Hart, who's also in the news lately, for his comments on, what would have happened if Obama's mother had an abortion. That's actually Todd T. Hart's version of the light touch. When I was there in his spiritual counseling session, his big concern was that Muslims, he said, are having too many babies while Christians are killing too many of theirs. So we have to outlaw abortion in America, and this is a direct quote, so the Christian can win the race with the Muslim. And if that wasn't creepy enough, that Coe, the leader of the family, said, okay, that's fine. He said, but I want you to think bigger than that. And that's where he came into this phrase, you know, this phrase that he uses, the totalitarianism of Christ, Jesus plus nothing, and gives as models of men who exemplify this kind of strength, Hitler, Pol Pot, Lenin, and Osama bin Laden, and it just makes your jaw drop. That's where the family's coming from.
And that is the Coe, Doug Coe and David Coe, saying that?
Doug Coe, David Coe is his son, sort of the heir apparent of the group. We saw David in the news giving the family likes to call itself the Christian Mafia. So it's no exaggeration to say that David Coe was playing the role of consigliere for John Ensign, arranging his breakup letter with his mistress, according to Doug Hampton, helping to sort of settle this payoff for his mistress. And then when his mistress, of course, was an aide, when he couldn't face her himself, it was apparently the family, who gave her pink slip. So these are, you know, you have these guys who are really very close to some very powerful politicians, and they're telling them, look, whatever you do, you know, that's what you have to do because you're chosen by God. the normal rules don't apply. When they run behind the protection, say freedom of religion, absolutely, I believe in freedom of religion. But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't ask our leaders about the sources of moral authority. If you're going to turn to someone like the Coes, who have such strange ideas about morality, tell the public, and if the public thinks that talking about Hitler and Pol Pot is a good way to get yourself spiritually centered, they'll vote for you. If they don't, maybe you'll find another job.
Right. Now, who are the Coes? Where did they come from? If the family's been around since 1935, is this like a patriarchy? Is this a family thing? I mean, literal family?
The Coes, yeah, I tell the story in the book. Doug Coe is a fascinating guy. He's this lanky, tall Oregonian, very sort of a little bit sort of soft-spoken, very charismatic, but very, very sort of behind-the-scenes influential. A few years ago, Time magazine wanted to put together a list of the 25 most powerful evangelicals. And because I write on these issues a lot, they asked me for my recommendations. I said, Doug Coe. Reporter wasn't familiar with them. I said, call around a dozen congressmen. If less than half mention Coe, don't include them. Well, Time included him. They put him number 4 on the list. They called him the stealth persuader. His friends call him the shadow Billy Graham. He got involved with the family back in 1959, the same year the family adopted Papa Doc Duvalier of Haiti as a client. And he ended up taking over the group in 1969 when the founder died, or as the family put it, was promoted to heaven. And Coe has led it ever since. And he's actually more secretive than the founder, a guy who says to the public, he says, or not to the public, but to his members, he says, the more invisible you can make your organization, the more influence it will have, which is true, which is why we have laws requiring lobbyists to register.
Right. Now, the family is not actually, they're not registered as a lobbying group. Yet they really
no, and I think we really have to ask some tough questions about that. And in fact, in the early days, the documents I was able to find in the archives, a lot of the way I was able to tell the story is through these hundreds of boxes of papers they dumped in the Billy Graham Center.
You know what?
They thought about registering as a lobby.
Hold that note, because I'm just entranced by this. We have to take a break. Jeff Charlotte is with us, the author of The Family, The Secret Fundamentalism at the Heart of American Power. We'll be right back on Air America Radio.
Sandler. You're listening to Nicole Sandler on Air America Radio.
And we are back with Jeff Charlotte. He wrote the definitive book on the family. It's called The Family, The Secret Fundamentalism at the Heart of American Power. Just out in paperback, by the way. Great timing on that. And he's also got a new piece on Salon.com, Sex and Power Inside the C Street House. I've got links to both of those from both my page at AirAmerica.com and my blog at RadioOrNot.com. And I could go on just talking with Jeff myself, but if you want to ask a question, 866-303-2270 is the number. Jeff joins us live tonight. Jeff, sorry, before we were so rudely interrupted by the clock, you were talking about the lobbying status or non-status of the family, where at one time they thought of registering as an official lobbyist, or they didn't.
Yeah, they thought about it and they didn't. They said, we should organize ourselves as a Christian lobby to advance God's kingdom. We register as a lobby, and they had this whole correspondence. It's in their archives. And they decide not to register as a lobby. Because they say, you know what, we can be more influential, we can be more effective if we just go to Washington and we just be friends with these politicians and loan them money and pay for their travel and introduce them to financial backers and introduce them to foreign leaders and do everything that a lobby does but we don't register as a lobby. Well, this is, of course, true, but you can be more effective doing that, and that's why we require, that's why we require special interest to register as lobbying. It's a form of accountability. And, you know, I try to emphasize this to folks out there. You know, criticizing the family is not criticizing religion. It's not criticizing Christianity. There's a lot of very good and honest conservative Christians who are as disturbed by this group as I am, because they do believe in accountability, and what the family is practicing is, in effect, what they say is accountability behind closed doors. That, to the rest of us, is the opposite of accountability.
Well, it's also, just listening to this tonight and chatting with you, it's frightening to me, the effect, you know, the control, the influence that the COs have on these elected officials, and where, to me, I'm seeing them as like lemmings. Now, you mentioned the travel, and so the family's influence is not only on domestic issues, but they've financed a lot of trips for our elected officials to go overseas, right?
Yeah, exactly. I think that's one of the things I'm hoping people look at now. We saw Senator Ensign and Senator Tom Coburn of Oklahoma in the news because of the sex scandal. But when we look a little closer, we see that they and about half a dozen other congressmen, Pete Hoekstra from Michigan, John Carter from Texas, Frank Wolf from Virginia, and several others, have been traveling overseas to represent the family, but they file themselves as doing official government business. They go to foreign officials in those countries and say, hey, I'm here to represent U.S. interests. And they go into bastions of democracy like Serbia, Sudan, Belarus, Albania. Senator Coburn goes to Lebanon and says the mission he's on, meets with the Prime Minister of Lebanon, and he's going to set up Christian prayer cells in the government of Lebanon, this country that's been torn by civil war between Christians and Muslims for decades. Is this an American interest to have a U.S. senator going over to the Middle East, where a lot of people think that we are waging a Christian crusade? And Senator Coburn goes over there and says, I'm representing the United States, and I'm here to tell you that that's it exactly. We're a Christian nation. This is the opposite of American interests, and because it's being paid for by a private sectarian organization, it also may be illegal, a violation of the Logan Act, which provides prevents diplomacy from private citizens.
Absolutely. Well, so I know you spotlight this in the Salon.com story, and I do hope word gets out. I noticed that the review of Ensign and Coburn's travel records, you said, was undertaken with a researcher from the Military Religious Freedom Foundation. Now, I've interviewed Mikey Weinstein also a number of times, who's the president of that group. I first got in touch with him when I had heard the story that actually came through Al Jazeera's English language channel, which we really don't have much access to here, but this somehow got through. And talking about U.S. military soldiers proselytizing in Afghanistan to the Muslim population, and they even brought over these Bibles, these Christian Bibles that were translated into the two languages most common over there. Is the family involved in that in any way, or is that?
That's a roundabout media circuit, because that actually broke that story. I broke that story in Harper's. And the May issue of Harper's is a story called Jesus Killed Muhammad. You can find it online in Harper's Magazine.
Okay.
And Al Jazeera picked it up, and we ended up doing a little documentary with Al Jazeera. I'm a big fan of Mikey Weinstein and the Military Religious Freedom Foundation. A very important organization, because indeed the family has been involved with the military. In fact, they helped form something called the Officers Christian Fellowship. 15,000 officers are members of this organization that describes their mission as reclaiming territory for Christ in the military, not allowing any of the opposition, all of which is spearheaded by Satan, to prevent them from this goal. That's their official mission statement. So when they say all of which is spearheaded by Satan, what do they mean? Well, you look deeper into that organization, and you find generals, colonels, describing not just non-Christians as the enemy, but Christians who they feel are not particularly devout enough. They say, they call these people spiritual terrorists. I interviewed generals, I interviewed military officers at every rank of the military from all the branches. The problem is absolutely pervasive. The distribution of Bibles in Afghanistan is really just just the tip of the iceberg. There's the story that I opened an article with is a young Army lieutenant driving a Bradley fighting vehicle, which is essentially a fast-moving tank, through Samarra, and on the side of it, they've had their Arabic translator painting giant red letters, "Jesus kill Muhammad." And anyone who pokes their head out of the building to complain, they open up on them with their big guns. And it's a murderous story. I spoke to the lieutenant. He's since been promoted to captain for this good work. There's really no accountability in the military either right now. I spoke to three-star generals who are opposed to this fundamentalist front within the military, but they were afraid to go on the record because the fundamentalists in the military are so much stronger than those who simply want to honor their oath to protect and defend the Constitution.
This story gets scarier and scarier. This is truly frightening. Jeff Charlotte is with us. He's author of The Family, the Secret Fundamentalism at the Heart of American Power. All right, I'm being greedy here. Let me share you. The number is 866-303-2270. Let's go to Joy in Santa Cruz, California. Hi, Joy. You're on with Nicole Sandler and Jeff Charlotte.
Hi. First of all, Jeff, I have your book, but my husband's taking it with him on a trip, so I won't be able to read it until he gets back. But and I want to thank you. I've been watching you on Rachel, and you've been illuminating my world. I was wondering if there's any relationship of the family to a group called the Dominionists. Because they seem
well,
to have...
the Dominionists is... Yeah, that's a great question. The Dominionists is not a formal group. Dominionism is a kind of a tendency within American fundamentalism. It's this idea that Christians are called to exert dominion over all spheres of life. And I think it's fair to say the family's theology is dominionist. There's another important aspect of dominionism that's kind of overlooked a lot of the times. When we think of fundamentalists, we often think of people who think Jesus is going to come back tomorrow, you know, and bring on the apocalypse. This is called premillennialism. Jesus is going to come back and rule for 1,000 years. Dominionists and the family are not in that gang. They believe in something called postmillennialism, the idea that they have to create 1,000 years of Christian rule around the world before Jesus will come back. And this idea, in American history, this was once progressive. Abolitionists believe this. They believe they had to abolish slavery. Jesus can come back to a world with slavery. But in the 20th century, it's become this extreme right-wing idea. And it is a common thread between the Dominionists and the family.
So has the apocalypse already happened for them?
No, it's not that the apocalypse already happened. They just have a different reading of the Book of Revelation, and it's significant. We are not living in the apocalypse. Did not sneak by us, and we didn't notice it. It's not as important to them. In other words, you know, they take this as a mandate for pursuing worldly power. So while if you're waiting for Jesus to come back tomorrow, you might not be getting involved in politics so much. But if you think you got 1,000 years, well, that gives you license to go off and start forming alliances with foreign dictators. And if some of your business partners get wealthy doing it, well, that's just a sign that God has favored your endeavor.
Okay. Do they want to establish the Bible as law?
Not exactly. Not exactly. I think this is a mistake a lot of progressives make, is that we tend to say, hey, this sort of creeping theocracy idea that the fundamentalists are coming, you know, and that we're headed toward this dystopian future. My argument is the fundamentalists are already here. The question we have to ask is not what do the fundamentalists want to do, but what have they already done? And in the book, I go back and I say, look at American history. Ask yourself, why does America alone of developed nations not have a strong organized labor movement? And when we go back and we look at the role of fundamentalists in giving a religious justification for union busting, right back to the 1947 Taft-Hartley Act, one of the most important pieces of legislation of the 20th century, broke the spine of labor, broke the New Deal, and that was, in some ways, the first legislative achievement of the family. They put their muscle into that, lobbied for it like a lobby, and got it passed.
Wow.
Yeah, that is interesting that was the impetus. All right, Joy, thank you for the call.
Bye.
Thanks. Bye. Jeff, all right.
Thanks, Joy.
So this is my problem with organized religion and with fundamentalists, where they say, and they're so, seem to be so anti antithetical to everything Jesus Christ stood for. They don't seem to be very philanthropic. They don't seem to care about the poor. They seem to be more concerned with the fetus than the child. How do they reconcile that?
Well, I mean, it comes down to, you know, your interpretation of Scripture. So whereas most of us are reading the New Testament, if we're Christians or if we're not Christians and we just are curious, and you read this, you know, you read about this guy, Jesus, and you see this message of love or forgiveness or mercy or justice, all this good stuff.
Right.
The family sees something else. They say Jesus is the most powerful guy in the world. So they think the bottom line of this is power. Now, it's not, this is, I think this is really important, because I spent a lot of time with family members, even guys that no progressive would be a great fan of, like Senator Sam Brownback, Kansas, very right-wing Republican. Brownback does this with the best of intentions. He believes he is going to help the poor. He does care about the poor, except he thinks he's going to help the poor by helping big business. He believes in that trickle-down idea. He thinks he's going to help the poor by getting rid of the minimum wage. He thinks he's going to help the poor by busting up unions. He thinks he's going to help the poor by exporting jobs, by gutting health care. But he really believes that he's doing it. They do these things with the best of intentions. And I think that allows us to humanize them and understand them as human, but also to recognize the insidiousness of an ideology that subverts good intentions toward these just disastrous effects.
Okay, but how about their the thing that brought them into the spotlight, the adultery? Doesn't that go against their religion? Doesn't that go against their beliefs?
Oh, it does. It does. In fact, I just got a great email from a guy who said he lived with the family many years ago. He'd been a member just like me, and he got kicked out for sneaking his girlfriend into the house, and they slept together that night, and she got pregnant, and thus began his real family. They have a very puritanical standard, but at the same time, they believe in this idea of chosenness. This idea that if you are chosen by God for leadership, it doesn't matter what you do. I mean, you shouldn't do these things, but it doesn't change the effect that you're chosen. So these guys like Sanford and Ensign, I mean, Sanford's really the perfect case because he gives us his example. You know, I'm not leaving power because I'm like King David. Well, the family actually uses that story a lot. They use this King David story to illustrate the idea of chosenness. And they say, why do we respect King David? Is it because he was a man of faith? No. Is it because he was a good man? No, he's not a good guy. This is King David goes and, you know, seduces another man's wife and then, actually has the guy killed. So they're looking at the bad side of King David, but they say, look, God still puts him in power. And that's how God works with his chosen men. And one of the sort of chilling stories in the book, we were talking about David Coe, Senator Ensign's spiritual advisor. David Coe illustrates this by saying to a young man in the family, let me explain to you what it means to be chosen. So suppose I hear you rape three little girls. What do I think of you? And this guy says, you think I'm awful. You think I'm a monster. And David Coe says, no, I don't. I think you're chosen. I think you're a member of the family. The normal rules don't apply. Morality itself is a secular construct. In other words, morality is for us little people. It's not for the members of the family. And I think that's, you know, when you get into that theology, you're talking about stuff that no church in America would endorse. And that's why I'm kind of thrilled when Christians actually take the forefront of the fight of exposing the family.
Well, this is work that needs to be done, and I would love to hear how, I would love these guys, everyone from, you know, John Ensign and the others that are still in there, Jim DeMint and Chuck Grassley and Lindsey Graham and James Inhofe and John Thune to have to answer questions about their involvement with the family. Jeff Charlotte, fascinating work. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time tonight, and I hope we can do it again. I thank you so much for coming on the air with me tonight.
Thank you, Nicole. It's been a pleasure.
So thank you. All right, we'll come back and wrap things up for this Wednesday night here on Air America Radio. We'll be right back.
Nicole Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler on Air America Radio.